black, proud, independent, determined, educated, resilient, compassionate, batty, funny, quirky, unique, creative, thoughtful, sincere, loyal, gutsy, vibrant, resourceful, imaginative, engaging, fabulous, awesome. Those are all words that describe me, the Brick City Brown Chick. Welcome to my podcast, What I Know Now. Thanks for listening.
Mirror in the bathroom, recompense for all my crimes of self-defense. Cure as you whisper, make no sense, drift gently into mental illness. Welcome back, everyone. I am your host, Brick City Brown Chick, and this is What I Know Now, episode 13, Mirror in the Bathroom. The quote I used at the beginning of the recording is from the song called Mirror in the Bathroom by The Beat, as they were known in England, and here in America, they were known as The English Beat. It's a band from the 80s, and it is a song about struggling with your mental health, and that is going to be our topic this week. I have had a really rough week, to be perfectly honest, and so I wanted to discuss a topic that is still kind of hidden, still kind of shamed. I know a lot of people look at struggling with their mental health differently since the pandemic, but I wanted to talk about this from my perspective, obviously, but from the perspective of a Black woman that grew up in the 1970s, and talk about how Black people feel about mental illness and getting help for your issues. I have struggled with depression for the majority of my life. I am 53 now. I think my first entrance into therapy, I was 15, maybe 16. So most of my life, depression has been a real issue. Now, the first thing a lot of people think when I say that is, okay, you grew up in a middle-class family, you were never poor, you never had to want for anything. There were never those kinds of issues. And one of the first things I want people to understand about what depression is and what it isn't is when you're young, when you're in your teens, it is not about what you have or what you don't have or what your friends have versus what you have. For me, depression really was a personal struggle with the world, with who I was, and what I was becoming. When I say that, people automatically always go to, do you mean sexual orientation? That's not what I mean. When I was 15, I was super stressed because I was in this very prestigious, very everybody's got to do well college preparatory Catholic all-girls school. And it's really hard to explain what a Catholic all-girls school is like unless you've been to one. It's serious pressure. It's serious stress. It's very competitive. High school was not an enjoyable experience for me. And I know it isn't for a lot of teenagers, but not being in a co-ed environment, which I was used to because my grade school, even though it was Catholic, it was boys and girls. What used to be popular in the Catholic religion, and as far as I can tell, the state of Maryland seems to be popular also, is they split the sexes up when you get to high school. And I think when I was a kid, what I always thought it was the hormones. It was, they didn't want the kids mingling because teenagers are interested in sex, and so they'd split you up. I understand that from a learning perspective, because what I will say is the good thing about having gone to an all-girls school is I had no academic fear. There have been lots of studies over the years about the different ways girls learn and boys learn and how that really comes out in college, that a lot of girls, even though they're smart, won't answer questions or they feel really restricted because they're used to high school where the boys get all the attention, whether they know anything or not, because they're just loud and obnoxious and goofy. So when I got to college, I did not have that fear of, I'm not going to show off how smart I am because I'm afraid people won't like me. I honestly didn't care. So if a professor asked a question and I knew the answer, I would always raise my hand. I would always volunteer to answer questions. And that really did make other people sort of look at me like, what's her deal? But that's the very positive thing that came out of my Catholic school experience. But while I was there, the struggle was real. It was a struggle every single day. So when I was 15, I became so depressed that I tried to kill myself. Or unalive myself. I guess that's the new word on the internet, which I still can't quite get used to. To me, it sounds ridiculous, but that's the word we're using. Okay, I tried to unalive myself at 15. My school recommended to my parents that they get me into counseling, that they get me into therapy. Now, one thing you have to understand about Black parents, especially from the generation I came from and the generations before. So if you're Gen X or baby boomer or silent generation, you understand what I'm about to say. Black parents felt very much, well, they felt two things. The first thing they felt was, it's hard enough being a Black person in America without trying to deal with mental issues. And whatever your mental issues are, you need to figure those out and figure it out on your own, because that's a luxury that we as Black people don't have time to deal with. So you need to get this together. So that was the first feeling. And the second feeling, which was a super strong feeling in my parents, was it was the what did I do or what didn't I do? What did I do wrong as a parent that my child now needs to go to therapy? So it was very hard for them to get past that point. The therapist I had recommended that I go weekly by myself, but that we also do family therapy once a week. And I remember just thinking, this is never going to work. Because by 15, I knew my parents well enough to know that it was just not going to fly. I think we went to exactly two sessions, the three of us. And then my mother said, listen, these are your issues and you've got to work them out. And that really doesn't have anything to do with your father and I. Was she wrong about that? Of course she was wrong about that. Was I mad at her and my father at the time because it felt like they just didn't want to be bothered? I was, and I did. But I've had 40 years to get over that, and I've moved past the anger of that situation. And one of the things I know now is my parents did the best they could based on their own childhoods and how they were raised and how their parents felt about therapy. Their feelings weren't surprising. So I spent a few years in therapy by myself trying to deal with, teenage girl issues, I would call them, like self-esteem issues and you're different than your friends issues, because I was always super different. This was long before I was able to embrace myself and who I am, which I've been able to do, but I've had a long time to get to that point. But at 15, you just don't know what you don't know, and you don't understand what you don't understand. So I got to a point in therapy where I felt like by my senior year, I felt like I felt pretty good. And, I can move forward with my life and not have to focus on my issues, I guess is a good way to put it. I was going to college. I was going to college far away. Nobody was going to know me there. I could, start with a clean slate and not have to worry about it. And then the February of my senior year, my father died. From my perspective, just kind of out of the blue. I knew a couple of weeks beforehand that he was going to die. And that's what happened. And all of a sudden, all the things that I was looking forward to, the prom, graduation, summer vacation, my last summer at home, all that suddenly didn't matter. It really didn't, because I was just in a pit and a valley and a place that no one else can understand unless you've been there. If you've lost a parent that you were close to, then you know what I'm talking about. And I was 17. One of my aunts, after my father died, had said to me, "Hey, you're a grown woman now. Like you need to take care of your mom." And I remember throwing up my hands and saying, "I'm not a grown woman. I'm 17. Like I realize I'm about to go to college and go out into the world, but there's nothing I can't fix the fact that my mother is broken because I am broken. Like we're both broken. So what you're asking me to do is ridiculous." That's not the word I used at the time. I said something else, but that's how I felt about it. And the reality is my mother and I mourned my father independently. We did not do that together. There's a saying that goes, grief is the only human emotion we all have to do alone. And that's true. She was his wife. I was his daughter. We had very different perspectives on his death and how he handled it and how we felt about it. But she and I were not in a place to be able to talk about that with each other. We just had to go our separate ways and deal with our pain on our own. So I was a college freshman. My father had been dead 6 months. And here I was in this totally new environment with a bunch of people I didn't know. And oh yeah, I was there to get an education. There was that. So I was just very wrapped up in myself and my own issues. I made a group of friends. all of that was cool. I joined, you know, campus activities and all that. But what I really did during that period of time was bury my pain. And something I tell people all the time who are trying to understand depression is, when you're depressed, you have two options in terms of coping and dealing. One way is to bury it, is to just stuff it inside and push it down and push it away. And the other way is you have outbursts all the time with people because you've got to get it out and you're just so frustrated. Because I am an introvert, which is a topic I'll get into in a whole nother episode, what it's like being an introvert. Because I was introverted, I buried my pain. I really did swallow a lot of it. Until second semester of freshman year, I really did think at one point I was on the verge of a nervous breakdown because I was so frustrated and so stressed out and so not coping. I was not coping. When you stuff things inside and you don't deal, you are not coping. You think you are, but you're not. So I finally went to the campus therapist and said, listen, here's my issues. And I just rattled off a list of things about, like, my roommate was pushing my buttons, and then there was my roommate's boyfriend who was just a jerk. And I was dating a guy, and he was not a jerk, but he was also adding to my stress. And then there were classes, and oh yeah, my father died. That was sort of the last thing on the list. And the therapist wrote it all down and was like, okay, the big issue here is the last one you named. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to talk about that. I've got all these other that is part of my past. My father is dead. I've got current problems. I've got roommate problems. I've got boyfriend problems. I've got a whole bunch of current problems. And she said, none of these current things matter until you deal with this one. And you clearly haven't dealt with it. And she was absolutely right. And it took more than a minute for me to be able to pull it back together and accept what had happened and how I needed to move forward. One of the things I know now that I didn't know at 18 and 19 is that the pain of someone's death never goes away. You never stop missing them. You just learn to cope. And that's what I had to do. I had to learn to deal with my new reality. Not just as young woman who was starting out in the world and figuring things out, but also as a woman whose father was gone. And that was a hard place to be. And I will not tell you that my time in therapy was brief, because it was not. I spent all of my latter teen years and most of my 20s, probably till 26, 27, in therapy. And something that people don't understand about therapy is, okay, if you're supposed to be getting better, at what point do you shut it off and say, okay, I'm better, I don't have to be in therapy anymore? That's not really how therapy works, especially not if you have a good therapist. The other thing about therapy is, what I've learned is that there's tons of therapeutic ways and approaches that people have. But the one definite thing I can tell you is there are two kinds of therapists. Therapist A will let you come in on a weekly basis and bitch, moan, whine, and complain, and listen to you bitch, moan, whine, and complain, and nod, and then say, see you next week, and you come back the next week, and it's repeated. The second kind of therapist is the therapist who will listen to you bitch, moan, whine, and complain. But at the end of the session, they will hold you accountable. How does that happen? They will look at you and say, okay, you've just spent 40 minutes complaining about all the things that are wrong in your life. What do you plan to do about them? And that's what's really key as a person going to therapy, is that you find someone who will help you do the latter, because that's how you're going to make progress and how you're going to get the work done. Have I had several therapists over the years? I've had several therapists over the years. I've had a couple of column A ones, but I've mostly had column B therapists who've said, okay, you're unhappy about this, this, and this. Fix it. Change it. What are the steps to making this better? And so that's been super important over the course of my life. Did my trips to therapy end in my 20s? They did not. I went to therapy till I was 26 or 27, and then I hit my early 30s and hit another depressive episode, rough patch, whatever you want to call it. And so I sort of had to start over, find a new therapist, and you don't always start at the beginning. When you go back to therapy, if you ended it at a certain point and then a few months or a few years or a couple of decades go by and you need to start with a new therapist, a lot of people think that means, oh, I've got to relive all this other stuff that I went through with the last therapist. You don't. If these are things that you've moved past and you've got a new set of things, then you focus on the new set of things. People have asked over the years how hard has it been to not just go to therapy, but to admit to people that you've gone to therapy. Going to therapy has never been the hard part for me. Maybe because I started at such a young age. I was a teenager. I hadn't had time to be jaded or guarded about therapy. So that may be the reason why going has never been hard. Have I always been willing to volunteer to people, A, that I've suffered with depression, and B, that I've sought therapy for it? Absolutely not. Because people are super judgmental. And a lot of people feel like, just like people who are on psychiatric medication, a lot of people feel like only crazy people take pills. Only crazy people take crazy pills. So only crazy people go to therapy. Go to therapy because you're crazy and you're trying to learn not to be crazy. I can honestly say with certainty that I've never been crazy. I have just been very emotional, very susceptible to pain is what I'll call it, and super sensitive. And part of that is sort of the poster for depression. If you are a person who takes in the world around you and internalizes it, that's usually a beginning stage for depression. And as I look back on my life, and I look back to my father, for example, and his issues and challenges, if I'm honest, what I know now is that he had depressive episodes and feelings. And people who have never been to therapy think that being depressed is like a cliff's edge, like everything's fine, and then it just drops off. That's really not how depression works. Depression is something that builds up over a period of time. It may be weeks, it may be months, it may be years, but it's not like you feel great today and then all of a sudden tomorrow you're curled up in a ball and can't get out of bed. It's really not how depression works. And so what I want people to understand is, if someone in your life you know is struggling with their mental health, with their emotional health, with just being able to get through day to day, don't diagnose them. That's a mistake that a lot of people make. A lot of people feel like, oh, okay, I know what's wrong with you. You're depressed and you need therapy and blah, 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 blah. It's overwhelming. It really is. The best thing to do is say, hey, I'm here to listen. You know, you need me, I'm right here. And if they reach out to you, be there. Like, hold up your end of the bargain and be the supportive friend or parent or sibling or whatever your relationship is. And if you reach the point where you feel like it's challenging or it's overwhelming for you, or you feel like you're in over your head and that they need help of a professional nature, you've got to find a nice, soothing way to say that and not say it in an accusatory tone and not say it like, you're crazy and I can't help you when you need help and figure it out. Your role as that supportive person is to help them find what they need and be there for them when they do find it and as they get better. I have gotten better over the many years I've been to therapy. I have learned a lot. If you as the patient do therapy correctly, you will learn a lot about yourself, about other people, about how you handle situations. One thing I learned about myself is that I am very sensitive. Now, there are some people who will say, oh, that's just a Cancer thing, because that's my astrological sign. But I've always been very sensitive. And this world can be a very difficult place for sensitive people because we internalize stuff. We take in everything. We hear everything. We see everything. We may not always comment on it, but we take it all and it all gets sorted. And sometimes the way it gets sorted is that we are not adequate, that we are not good enough. And it took me many years to get to the point of being able to say, no, it's not me. This particular situation with this person, no, it's you, it's not me. And a lot of people, even people who don't go to therapy or feel like they don't need therapy, a lot of people never get to that point in their life. They're never able to have the strength to say, no, I'm not taking the blame for this. I didn't do anything. This is your fault. This is not my fault. Or we just need to agree to disagree. It takes a lot of inner strength and having spent the time and done the work to know who you are to be able to say that and mean it. And I have said it and I have meant it. And I don't think I would have ever been able to do that if I had not sought out the help I needed to be able to survive in the world as a sensitive person, but not be a doormat, but not be stepped on, but not be disrespected. And I know today with, you know, younger people, the Gen Zs, the Gen Alphas, respect is one of those words that's taken on a whole different meaning. And to be dissed, which is what we said in the 80s, and now what people say is to be disrespected, that has a whole different meaning than it did when I was younger. But I have learned over the years that if you allow people to disrespect you, they will continue to do it. So you have to make it clear to them as early in the relationship as possible that you will not tolerate their disrespect, their bad behavior, their just general bad attitude. And that's not always going to win you friends. It's really not. And sometimes it means you're going to lose friends because people feel like, oh, wait, this person's not going to let me walk on them or take advantage of them. What I want people to understand is as long as you're doing what's best for you, that is really all you can ask for. If standing up for yourself is what's going to make you stronger, make you better, then always choose that. What I have learned about myself over the course of my life is that I am an incredibly resilient person. I have been through many, many challenges in my life, and I've been able to come out on the other side despite the pain and the frustration and the depression because I committed to myself to do the work to become stronger, to become better, to become my own cheerleader. And that's something I'd wish for everyone, whether we've met, whether I know you or not. It is incredibly gratifying to know that when push comes to shove, you're going to stand up for you. A funny story from a few years ago is one of the things my mother always thought about me, because I was introverted, because I held things close to the vest and I didn't always advertise how I felt about situations, she interpreted that to mean that I was shy and reclusive and that she was just worried about how I was going to handle the world. So a few years ago, my husband and I were visiting her and we were taking her to dinner. And I don't even know how the subject came up, but she said something to the effect of, I'm really glad to see the person you've become, because when you went to college, I really did think that the world was going to run you over, that you were just so meek and mild, and that people were going to take advantage of you and just run all over you. And my husband looked at my mother and then looked at me and looked back at my mother and said, I didn't meet that chick. That's not the chick I meant when we started dating. He's like, that is not, those are never words I would have associated with her then or now. So I just thought that was funny. And it's just an example of how far I've come from where I was. So what I want to say to people is what I know now is if you are depressed or unsure and you need help, seek it out. Make sure you find what you need, whether that be an in-person therapist, an online therapist, however you want to do that, whatever way you want to do it. Just make sure you get that help because it's going to make you better. It's going to make you stronger and it's going to make you see the reality, to see things as they are and not the way your brain might twist it into something else. So if that's something you really need, make sure you go for it, and it's going to make you a better person, just like it made me. So that is what I wanted to share this week. I want to thank everybody for joining me again, or joining me for the first time if you're new. If you'd like to join my YouTube page, it is Brick City Brown Chick. So if you type Brick City Brown Chick into your YouTube, say that quickly, search, you'll see the cartoon version of me with the big afro. So you can subscribe to my page so that you'll get reminders when this episode comes out every Thursday. If you'd like to listen to me wherever you get your podcast, this podcast is everywhere. So Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon, all those places you get your podcasts, you can pick up What I Know Now. So thank you, everybody, for joining me, and I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.